long-term trends.
Is the singularity here?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
Be as gods, you know, catapult of propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed split level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
This is a program where I had to travel to Colorado Springs to interview people I see every single day. Welcome to A View from the Bunker and the Derek Gilbert channel on YouTube, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Today, two more interviews recorded at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, July 15th through the 17th of 2016. Again, you're getting the audio version now. The video version of these interviews will come out when the DVD set is released. Those should be available by October, possibly November. If you'd like a really good deal on getting the DVD set, recommend you check out the Skywatch TV store at skywatchtvstore.com, where if you pre-purchase the DVD set, you not only get the DVDs, you get the Researcher's Library of Ancient Texts from Defender Publishing, a five-volume set. Each one of those is big as a large metropolitan area yellow pages. That alone, a $150 value when you purchase the DVD set. But Prophecy Watchers is very graciously allowing me to use the audio for these interviews for this series, which will run just, well, about through the time that the DVDs become available. This week, our featured interviews from the Rocky Mountain Prophecy Conference, Josh Peck, a man I see Monday through Friday, and the woman I see every day, my best friend. We begin today with Sharon K. Gilbert. Technology has really enhanced the quality of life for us in the West, but it has gotten to the point where it's becoming its own religion. I'm here at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference with the only speaker at the conference who is allowed to call me sweetie. She's the author of Ebola and the Fourth Horseman of the Apocalypse, the science editor for Skywatch TV, my best friend, my wife, Sharon Gilbert.
Hi, sweetie pie.
Hi, love. Your talk is on a topic that we've discussed a lot. It was actually the subject of the movie Inhuman.
Yes.
Your talk, I Compute, Therefore I Am.
It's all about artificial intelligence and the drive towards self-directed evolution and transhumanism, which, of course, is what the documentary Inhuman is all about. You and I have many times on SciFriday talked about this very topic. We've also sort of teased ahead the plan to produce a show called Memes and Media.
Mm-hmm.
My talk actually incorporates that same idea because our children and our grandchildren are being programmed to accept an artificial intelligence as the new world leader, as the image of the beast.
Yeah, it is already coming out in various news items about discussions as to whether an artificial intelligence can be classified as a person.
Well, in Europe, they are legally, they are trying to make that very case that you've got something that is sentient, therefore you need to treat that person legally, that robot, legally, as a person. We're even talking about the industrialized robots, the ones that are just an arm.
Mm-hmm. And that raises all kinds of bizarre legal questions, like could you be sued for cruel and unusual treatment if you fail to provide your robot with regularly scheduled maintenance?
Exactly. And probably that robot will be defended by the robot AI.
Yes.
They already have robot AIs.
Yes. The world's first AI attorney.
Uh-huh.
But it's, and while this sounds almost like material for a sitcom, it is very serious because there are those in the world of technology, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, robotics, genetics research.
Very much so.
Who are seeing this as the key to the survival of the human race and our transcendence from human beings with finite lifespans to immortals.
Well, right now it's being spun as a way to help those with memory issues, Alzheimer's patients, and other problems with cognition. It will eventually be sold as a way to, and already we're seeing it, a way to enhance your cognitive abilities so that you can do better in school. You can get a better job because you are an enhanced person. These deep stimulating implants that are being used now in Alzheimer's patients, they also will eventually be used to help stimulate parts of your brain like the hippocampus and the limbic system to help you be a better athlete, to have better recall, to have better surgical skills, You wouldn't you prefer that your surgeon be the one who's enhanced instead of the old Homo sapiens surgeon who doesn't quite do it as well? That's the frightening future, and it's not that far away. By 2025, 2030, the world will have shifted on its axis.
Mm. The use of these techniques and innovations to enhance the quality of life of people who are maybe suffering from cognitive disabilities. Mm-hmm. We know that DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects mm-hmm. Agency, is doing research into enhancing cognition mm-hmm. for soldiers who suffered severe head trauma. And that is a good thing. But the field of, what do they call it, nootropics,
yes,
hacking the brain, mm-hmm. it's going way beyond just enhancing quality of life, isn't it?
Nootropics are being used already. I mean, those little drinks that you get.
Yeah.
That supposedly help
those little
you
energy drinks
energy
and help you focus.
That have drugs in them that should be regulated, drugs in them and actually affect your brain and your ability to recall. Who knows spiritually what's really going on with some of these things? Because when you actually affect a neuron and you change the way it responds to the world and to stimulus, you might actually be opening a doorway. We don't have any long-term research that shows whether or not if you take these things, you're more likely to interact with spiritual beings.
Hmm. The title of your topic, I compute, therefore I am, you know, implies godhood, implies, because I am, of course, is how Yahweh identified himself to Moses.
Yes. Well, it's based on Rene Descartes' philosophy that we all have heard that.
I think, therefore I am.
The problem is that's not the whole phrase. The whole phrase is, I doubt, therefore I think, therefore I am. In other words, this is part of the early Enlightenment movement that ended up in the 19th century with Erasmus Darwin and eventually his nephew, his grandson, Charles Darwin, mm-hmm. and with Sir Thomas Galton, who took us in the direction of actually starting to study the brain in a way that led to the eventual artificial intelligence explosion. I doubt, therefore, I think. In other words, you're not a rational being unless you doubt everything first. And that's the opposite of what God tells us to do.
Right.
He says, first of all, believe.
Yeah. And we're not to check our brains at the door, as it were, but there is a belief amongst those who see science as the replacement for God.
But he says, love me with all your heart, soul, and mind.
Yes. Come, let us reason together.
Yes.
It is a faith that is based on evidence, mm-hmm. and the evidence has been preserved for us. But again, there is faith required. We don't have a DNA test that can definitely prove that Jesus lived and died and rose again from the grave. But we do have the testimony of the eyewitnesses who were there. And then using our minds, we bridge that gap through faith.
Exactly. The same world that would look at Julius Caesar. We weren't alive during Julius Caesar's time, and yet we have fewer records of Julius Caesar than we have from Jesus Christ.
Right, right. And it's just how we weigh and process the evidence. So the goal of the transhumanist movement, the idea that we can enhance humanity beyond the limits of our biological biological capabilities, is all about achieving what the Nakash in the garden promised to Adam and Eve?
Apotheosis. And Ray Kurzweil comes right out and says it. He says, by the year 2030, we shall be gods.
Hmm. So he's moved up his timeline because he very famously predicted that we would be immortal by 2045, in fact, which spawned...
He's starting to tell groups of students that it's 2030. Your talk is going to be about something very similar, except it's a longer timeline.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually talking about the great inception.
Yes. And see, now here we're turning the tables where she's getting to interview me. And she's also the only speaker here who gets to do that.
Sweetie.
The enemy has been lying to us ever since the beginning. The subtitle of my talk is Satan's Psyops from Eden to Armageddon. Three basic points that I'm going to try to make. First of all, that the supernatural war is real and has been ongoing since the garden. Point two, that this war is all about control of the cosmic mountain, God's holy mountain.
Now, when you talk about the cosmic mountain to me, you actually equate that to Eden.
Yes. Eden was the first.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a number of other mountains there are sacred mountains all over the planet. And it's because the enemy has, as part of their campaign of psychological operations, mm-hmm. implanting false information
in humanity to get us to act as though that false information was true, which is why we've got so many false religions, false doctrines, false prophecies, and people acting as though they're true, which is going to lead ultimately to a very violent confrontation before, well, the final confrontation, which will be at the holy mountain of God, which, of course, is Mount Zion, where he will reign forever, we are told in Scripture.
Amen. But the woman who rides the beast, she's riding seven hills.
Right.
You talk about seven mountains.
Seven key mountains that sort of define the phases of this war. Eden, Mount Hermon, of course, which is where the Watchers came down and corrupted humanity. Mount Zaphon, which is the was the, known to the ancient world as the holy mountain of Baal. It's where his palace was located. Hermon also, very interesting, was known as the holy mountain of El, which is the creator god of the Canaanite pantheon. Mount Sinai, of course, where God begins to work his plan to redeem humanity. And, of course, I should point out, Eden, most of us hear the word preceded by the words the Garden of.
Right.
But Ezekiel 28 tells us that it was a garden on God's holy mountain.
Yes.
So
the Mount of the Assembly.
The Mount of the Assembly, the Mount of Congregation.
That's your Mike Heiser moment.
Yes. it was described in Ezekiel 28 as the seat of the gods. Adam and Eve were there in the seat of the gods. That's where the divine council met, where God and the other divine beings who made up his sort of supernatural task force met. And humanity was part of that council until they disobeyed and ate from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Kicked off the mountain, kicked out of the council. And this long war is all about bringing humanity back to God's holy mountain and restoring us to our place in the divine council. That drives the enemy, the rebellious fallen angels, wild with rage. So we've got Eden, Hermon, Mount Zaphon, Sinai. Then, of course, you've got the artificial mountain Babel, which I skipped over. Of course, that was man's attempt to force his way back into the divine council. And, of course, we saw how that worked out for Nimrod and the people of the earth scattered over all the earth. And the divine council established over the nations, and I'll talk about what the implications of that were. That's where the ancient world got its pantheon of false gods.
And we see that over and over again, Olympus and Asgard.
Right.
And
interestingly, this Mount Zaphon was also a mountain holy to Zeus. Baal has been known by many names throughout history, not just Baal.
Yes.
Zeus being one of them. Then, of course, you've got Mount Zion.
Yes.
When David established his that is his holy city, Yahweh's holy city. And Solomon, of course, built the temple there on the Temple Mount. And the Temple Mount is Mount Zion. I know that there's some competing theories, but that is where it's located. And that's where Armageddon will be fought. And I talk about why it's there and not at the Valley of Megiddo. But the seventh holy mountain, and I almost skipped over this, but considering that it led to the creation of the world's second largest religion, and if we're still here by the year 2070, the world's largest religion, it's Jabal al-Nur, which is Arabic for the Mount of Enlightenment. It's where the cave is located, that where Muhammad allegedly, well, he received a visitor there who identified himself as Gabriel, but it wasn't Gabriel.
No.
So anyway, those are the seven mountains that sort of define the long war, and then we'll talk about how the enemy's psyops have resulted in a number of false prophecies that are being that will lead to the final conflict at Armageddon, and sadly a large number of Christians and our Jewish brothers and sisters who will wind up fighting on the side of the Antichrist, believing him to be God.
This is a huge topic. I have watched you over the past few weeks try to whittle this talk down so that you can fit it in the space.
I was at about 2.5 hours before I started editing.
But you are writing a book.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
This book will come out probably next year in 2017 sometime.
Right. Titled The Great Inception, Satan's Psyops from Eden to Armageddon.
Wow.
So, well, it's fascinating. And ultimately,
we're essentially talking about the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Just from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And again, the whole idea that man can use science to achieve immortality is just another psyop.
Yes, it is.
There are people who say, why should we worry about this? Because we don't have the technology to actually take the human mind and transplant it into a chip, but it doesn't matter.
You just have to give the impression that you can do it, and then when the chip or whatever, when the artificial intelligence program is inhabited by a spirit, then it will appear to be sentient.
Yes, and the bottom line is, what do people believe is true? Because that, to them, might as well be true.
Yeah.
Our children are coming out of the cradle with electronic devices, seeing the miracle of technology every day. And
augmented reality.
Augmented reality.
And see something that's not there.
Yeah. And putting their faith for their salvation in that instead of in God. And that is the danger of the transhumanist movement.
And our work is cut out for us.
Amen to that. So, well, that's our discussion. We basically summarized the entire conference, basically, because the whole thing is about the long spiritual war and how the enemy is trying to...
That's exactly what it's all about.
Yeah.
And most churches are not teaching and preaching this.
Yeah.
So praise God for the people who came here.
Amen. And we thank you for watching with Sharon Gilbert at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. I'm Derek Gilbert. Science, even quantum physics, doesn't have to be scary if you're a Christian. Joining us here in the interview room at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference is a young man who thinks, well, he thinks not just outside the box, but he thinks outside the Tesseract, which is the fourth dimensional box. He's the author of Cherubim Chariots and Quantum Creation, the host of The Sharpening Report, which you'll find online, and co-host of Into the Multiverse with Josh Peck, which is not only available on Skywatch TV, but now picked up by the PTL Network, Wednesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Central Time. That's ptlnetwork.com. Josh Peck.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, brother. Normally, we just have to yell through the walls at one another there through at Skywatch TV.
Yeah, that's true.
boy, your talks here today... extra-dimensional UFOs, and does the supernatural exist in the fourth dimension? There probably are some folks out there who would look at these titles and say, what does this have to do with the Bible?
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know, the truth is that the world is interested in these things, and the world is providing very tantalizing answers that are totally unbiblical, not Christian, and will not lead people to God.
Hmm.
They'll lead people away. So my whole deal with all this is that people's souls are at stake. You know, people's very eternities are at stake, and we need to provide an answer for these things. In the case of UFOs, real people are having real experiences, and even if somebody hasn't had an experience, a lot of people, and a growing number of people, are believing in these things. But unfortunately, we have shows like Ancient Aliens and other things like that that will provide a non-biblical, really convenient answer for these experiences. And I'm not trying to bash on Ancient Aliens or, you know, anybody that's looking for answers, that's great. But, you know, when it comes to the point where somebody's eternity is at stake, you know, we have to get in there and provide our answer too. And ultimately, our answers are going to fit better with the evidence, which is what I showed in my extra-dimensional UFOs talk.
Mm. Now, extra-dimensional UFOs, a lot of people assume that these craft that they see that seem to defy the laws of physics are just advanced technology that have traveled here from Zeta Reticuli.
Right.
Extra-dimensional, you're actually making a different case.
Yeah, well, there's actually three types of UFOs that people commonly see. The first one is a human-made advanced UFO.
The government, a government project that they don't want us to know about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that has a layer of mystery all to its own, but it's nothing aliens, it's just humans doing stuff and not telling.
Well, right, yeah, the F-111 stealth fighter before it was
there
debuted in the first Gulf War was something that people around Groom Lake in Nevada would see and think, UFO!
Exactly.
Well, in a sense it was, in that it was unidentified until the government said, yeah, that's an F-111.
And exactly, perfect example. So, of course, we can expect that they have projects like that now. I mean, it's not like they're going to stop there and say, well, we did it, that's all, that's enough.
We've gone as far as we can go. Everything's up to date in Kansas City.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people will see those and misidentify them. The second type is actual biological entity or otherworldly entity. I hesitate at the term alien just because of the connotation attached, but it's just a biological three-dimensional entity that is creating nuts and bolts craft. So it's still made from physical material, maybe on Earth or off-world. And just to be clear for people at home, I believe these things are demonic, but I think there's a lot more to that than what's commonly talked about in the church.
Mm.
For example, this is just a kind of crude example, but a lot of people have reported seeing the gray aliens.
Right.
There's a theory that I think fits biblically that those might actually actually be essentially just a cloned biological meat suit that a demon can possess. Because what's going to be easier to possess, something like that, or a person who has a soul that's going to fight and it's going to be a big struggle?
Mm-hmm.
So that might answer some of the alien phenomenon out there.
Hmm.
And a lot of that stuff could be done on underground bases or, you know, underwater bases. So that's the second type. It's still nuts and bolts, and it's extremely advanced, way more advanced than we would be able to do on our own, but still not, it's still three-dimensional. So the last one is what I focused this talk on, extra-dimensional UFOs. That's the strangest one. That's mm-hmm. the one that gives, confuses most people. And even ancient aliens, that sort of crowd doesn't really know what to do. They a lot of times they'll try to throw that third one into the second one and say, well, they must be really advanced. But the thing is, these things are able to change shape and be in more than one place at one time, go faster than light, you know, make right-hand turns without annihilating the beings mm-hmm, inside. Mm-hmm. The only way that there are things that would break the three-dimensional physics that we're used to and that we have to live by today.
Right.
But if you add an extra dimension or a couple extra spatial dimensions, all that stuff is possible. Mm-hmm. So that's what my whole talk was about.
Give the example. I've heard you do this before. Give the example of Flatland to maybe help illustrate how something entering our three-dimensional world from another dimension mm-hmm. might give the illusion of violating our laws of physics.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example. Every physicist that talks about extra dimensions uses Flatland.
Yeah.
Chuck Missler uses it. That was the first time I heard it. And it's just such a good example. But basically, the premise is you think of a two-dimensional universe, just a flat plane. It could even be on your tabletop.
Like a piece of paper.
Perfect. And now, of course, their space would be like our space. You know, it's not made of anything, really, so it's transparent. But imagine if I, as a three-dimensional being, wanted to communicate with a Flatlander or try to show myself to a Flatlander, which is a being of two dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that Flatlander has no concept of up or down.
Right.
They only have left, right,
just
forward,
on that plane. Right.
Exactly. So they can't look up at me. I could look down at them,
right,
but they can't see me. So what I would have to do is, say, stick my finger in Flatland. Now, if they're viewing from the, if they're viewing this way,
mm-hmm.
what they're going to see is they're going to see a point as the very tip of my finger goes into Flatland. They'll see a point appear out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
They'll see it grow in size as my finger continues in. And then as I pull it out, they'll see the whole thing in reverse. Now, if I put two fingers in, and this is where it gets really interesting.
So they'll see two entities.
They'll see two entities that can move independently. And a Flatlander would assume that they're different,
mm-hmm.
they're different objects. But they're not.
Right.
They're of the same entity.
Yeah. Now, and if you've used a whole hand and then
they would see five.
And then all of a sudden at the point that your hand gets to the level of the plane, they all merge.
They all merge together. Exactly. So the idea is take that thought exercise and add a dimension for us.
Yeah.
A four-dimensional object. And we're not talking about time. This is just space. If a fourth spatial dimensional object were to breach our space, what would it look like? So you mentioned the Tesseract before. A cube of four dimensions is called a hypercube.
Mm-hmm.
And we could even, say if I put a cube on Flatland, they would see a square. Well, if a hypercube breached our space, we would just see a cube,
mm-hmm.
a three-dimensional cube. Or a hypersphere, which is a sphere of four dimensions. If a hypersphere were to breach our dimensions, what we would see is a point in space, a little ball, and it would just expand and get bigger as it was passing through, even though to us it wouldn't look like it's moving around or wouldn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But as it's passing through, and then it would shrink and
then disappear. Yeah.
And the same thing with the two fingers deal. If you have a more complex object of extra spatial dimensions, it could look like two different entities. Well, that's exactly what's being reported in a lot of these UFO cases.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeing metallic, what seems like nuts and bolts craft, even though they're incredibly smooth. There's no seams or anything, but they look solid and metallic, changing shape, changing color, breaking off, coming back together, just disappearing without even having to take off. It's all extra-dimensional. And these are people that most people don't study quantum physics.
That's right, right.
They wouldn't know to make it up like that.
Yeah,
And the interesting thing is Ezekiel talked about this melding effect when he saw this amazing vision. And he saw the cherubim holding the throne of God. The cherubim were melded together in the same way. And I said in my presentation, there's no way anyone from Ancient Aliens or New Age or anything is going to convince me that Ezekiel knew enough about quantum physics 2,600 years ago to make something like that up. I believe that he recorded exactly what he saw, and he might not have been able to understand exactly, but he recorded it, and we can look at that today and say, that's extra-dimensional unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
And strangely enough, I think God even gave us a little clue, because when you think about the shape of the cherubim with their arms out, mm-hmm. that's kind of the shape of a tesseract,
which is interesting. Yeah, and this is fascinating stuff. I'm looking at Ezekiel chapter 1 right now, and it's, it's easy to see why those who are predisposed to believe that we've been visited by extraterrestrials for thousands of years would try to read into the text an extraterrestrial craft of some sort. But it makes more sense than what, from a biblical perspective, and because the evidence is consistent with the theory that the as you've called them elsewhere, denizens of the fourth dimension are created beings created by Yahweh who interact with our three spatial dimensions from time to time.
And I don't fault anybody for looking into this, trying to find an answer, and coming up with an extraterrestrial hypothesis, because that's what the world is telling them. But I think that's why we need to get out there and provide our answer. I think it's more exciting. I think it fits better with the research. It fits better. I mean, there are even non-Christian UFO researchers, such as Jacques Vallée, who adhere to this. It's called the extra-dimensional hypothesis,
right.
The origin of these things. So I think when somebody really looks at the evidence and understands what's going on, they'll come away with an extra-dimensional idea every time.
Mm. And I think people who question, again, whether this is really relevant to the gospel of Jesus Christ, all they need to do is look at how many people attend UFO festivals every year. The annual festival in Roswell, New Mexico, Contact in the Desert at Joshua Tree, California, and other festivals like those around the country. Then compare the attendance of those events to the attendance here this weekend and see who's reaching more people.
Yeah.
Because people at those events, when you read the reports, you know, USA Today, national news networks will send reporters out there, and it's always kind of tongue-in-cheek, oh, look at these people, ha-ha.
Yeah.
But now, when they ask people why they're there, it's because they want answers to the questions that are answered in the Bible. Where did we come from? Why are we here? And where do we go when we die?
Exactly. And at least that community is providing an answer. It might not be the right one, but they're validating the experience. You know, a lot of times in the church, if somebody sees a UFO and they go and tell their pastor what's going to happen, you'll be lucky if they say, well, it's demonic. You'll be lucky if that's all you get.
Right.
You might be laughed out of the church. And a lot of people have been rejected from the church because of things like that, not having their experiences validated.
Yeah.
But I really believe we need to validate that. And I said in my conference, I don't doubt these things anymore. You know, when I first started in this and somebody would tell me their experience, I would always kind of be skeptical, but I'm not anymore. I would rather err on the side of believing somebody and they're just trying to pull one over on me. I would rather make that mistake than make the mistake of not believing somebody who has actually had a run-in with these things and a real experience and needs answers.
Yeah.
I think we have those answers.
Well, I keep coming back to a survey that was done by the National Geographic Channel a few years ago as they were getting ready to launch one of their UFO hunter shows and found that 36% of Americans, American adults, believe that we are being visited by extraterrestrials. Compare that to the Barna Group research, 2009, only 9% of American adults have a biblical worldview, meaning that in America today, four times more adults believe in E.T. than in the God of the Bible.
Wow.
That's why Josh Peck's program is important. Josh, where do people follow the Sharpening Report?
They can do so at sharpeningreport.com. That's the hub for all of my stuff. And, of course, skywatchtv.com will have Into the Multiverse and all that end of it.
All right. Do check it out. It's mind-expanding, but as Josh points out, there are a lot of people being drawn into the New Age and other alternate false belief systems because of these topics. At the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, I'm Derek Gilbert.
As always, in the show notes at vftb.net and at youtube.com/Derek Gilbert, I will put links not only to Josh's website. Of course, if you're already here, you're pretty much aware of where Sharon and I reside on the web. But I do encourage you to go to the YouTube channel and subscribe and then share the videos around as we try to get more video intense on the interviews that we present here on A View from the Bunker. I'll also put a link in the show notes to where you can order a copy of the DVD set for the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. Again, when you order it, you get equal value at no extra charge. The five-volume set, the Researcher's Library of Ancient Texts, that five-volume set, a $150 value included when the DVDs are shipped. And by the way, and congratulations, if you're not already aware, which you probably are because Josh has a much bigger YouTube following than I do, that Josh and Christina's new arrival has entered this world safely and healthily, safe and healthy. Both mother and baby are doing fine. Adam Peck, a new addition to the population on planet Earth, new addition to the Skywatch TV family as well. Early Tuesday morning, Adam made his appearance, and Mama was more than ready to greet her new child. I think she'd been ready for about a week by the time Adam finally decided to make his presence known. So, but anyway, congratulations to Josh and Christina. We are thrilled for the two of them. And if you know Christina's backstory, you'll know that, look, every child is born. When you consider the miracle of birth, it is a gift from God to begin with. But if you know Christina's backstory, you know that Adam and their other children, Nathan and Jackie, are all miracles in the literal sense of the word. So we are thrilled to be part of welcoming them into the world. A couple of items to note this week as I record this on the morning of Wednesday, September 14th of 2016. Former Israeli leader Shimon Peres is in serious but stable condition after a massive stroke. This occurred late Tuesday night, and you know, Peres is 93 years old, so he has had a long life, longer than most. He's undergoing treatment at Tel Aviv Hospital at this hour. Of course, you know that former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon lingered in a coma after a massive stroke for years before finally passing away. Shimon Peres, not in a coma, but recovering from a massive stroke. Again, undergoing treatment, serious but stable his condition as of this hour. Interesting that the, you know, those of us who have been paying attention to this have known for quite some time that the United States government, even though it's not officially making this making this an official policy, let me phrase it that way, has in effect been pursuing an official policy of barring Christian refugees from the Middle East while welcoming Muslim refugees with open arms. The Council on Foreign Relations, which is a group that essentially has a monopoly on American foreign policy, published an op-ed piece at the Council on Foreign Relations website under the headline, "The U.S. Bars Christian, Not Muslim Refugees from Syria." And they go into the numbers, which, again, if we've been paying attention, and I'm sure you have, if you follow this program, this is no news to us, but it is news that the CFR, which, again, essentially has dominated American foreign policy for decades, is now coming out and stating this openly. So maybe there is a sea change taking place in the among the elites that run the country. They point to the numbers. The United States have accepted 10,801 Syrian refugees. 56 are Christian. And they emphasize it by saying not 56%, 56 total. That's 0.5%. 10% of all Christians are, of all Syrians, I should say, are Christian, which would mean about 2.2 million Christians. Now, where are they? Well, they're not coming into the United States, apparently, and that is the fact. So why is that not represented in the number of refugees who are being allowed into the United States? This is the legacy, the sad legacy of the U.S. intervention in the Levant and in Mesopotamia. There were a couple million Christians in Iraq at the time we invaded in 2003. Now, by some estimates, there are as few as 200,000, some say even fewer. The other 90% have either fled for their lives or have been killed once Saddam was taken out of the way. Now, Saddam Hussein was a brutal man. There's no question about that. But he kept a lid on the sectarian violence that has dominated that part of the world for 5,000 years. You need to be a strong man in that part of the world. That's just a fact of life. And even people who are no experts on foreign policy, like me, were able to see this fairly soon after we entered. And I'll admit, I supported the war at first. I supported the war. But over time, as new information became available, changed my mind, changed my opinion on it. And to his credit, Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis, who we had the opportunity to spend some time with earlier this week, or rather at the end of last week, he was in town on Thursday, Friday, to record some programs for his forthcoming book, Future War. And he told us how in 2003, he was in the meetings with high-ranking members of the Bush administration in 2002, 2003, as they were trying to build a consensus to go to war against Iraq, and he was arguing against it. And after the war began, he took his concerns to the media, which resulted in an investigation by the Pentagon's IG. Did not ask him for details on that. I'm going to have to look it up. It's a matter of public record, is the point. A matter of public record that Colonel McGinnis was against the war before we went in because he said we knew from the Iraqi generals who were talking to us behind the scenes that they didn't have weapons of mass destruction. And that Saddam was keeping a lid on violent Islamist terrorist groups in Iraq. So, this is the American legacy in the Middle East over the last 15 years. We've destabilized it, and we've caused the absolute destruction of the oldest Christian communities in the world. That happened on our watch while our soldiers were in country. And there was only so much they could do. I'm not blaming it on the Army or the Marines. But we took out the restrainer. And I'm not equating Saddam Hussein with the restrainer of 2 Thessalonians. Different restrainer. But Saddam ruled with an iron fist. And that was what kept the Shias from killing the Sunnis, and the Sunnis from killing the Shias, and both of them killing the Kurds and killing the Christians. That's just a fact. Iranian behavior in the Persian Gulf getting worse. According to military reports, they are stepping up their harassment of U.S. Navy ships in the Persian Gulf. Apparently, they are aware. And this is something else Colonel McGinnis mentioned. You'll see those interviews, by the way, coming up in October. Yeah, in October with Colonel McGinnis. One will be broadcast on network television outlets, World Harvest Television, Christian Television Network, Cornerstone Network, Victory Television Network. The other will be a web-exclusive interview on Skywatch TV. But Colonel McGinnis's book it's an important book. And he believes that we're in a bad situation in the Middle East. We've created a mess. There's no good way to extricate ourselves from it. But one thing we should not be doing is allowing the Iranian military to, make our soldiers and sailors look impotent. And that's what's happening in the Persian Gulf. Meanwhile, Russia, and this is another point Colonel McGinnis makes in his forthcoming book, has, spending only a fraction of the money on its military as the United States. I mean, the U.S. military budget is equal to the military budgets of the next 8 largest nations combined. That's China, Russia, the U.K., Saudi Arabia, Germany, France, Japan, etc. And yet Russia has managed, and China too, managed to develop fifth-generation weapons that are beginning to leave the United States behind technologically. Russia has developed, according to, you have to take this with a grain of salt because it comes from Sputnik News, which is very, let's say it's as Russo-centric as Fox News is Amero-centric, okay? But they built a glide bomb that's virtually invisible to radar and has a range of over 30 kilometers. So what is it, about 20 miles? So it can be dropped from a plane at distance from a target, and it will glide invisible to radar and anti-missile systems, therefore. The new bomb called Drill announced in Russian media just a few days ago. And again, this is one of the topics that Colonel McGinnis discusses in his forthcoming book and why I think it's an important book for Americans to read. Something else that we need to remember is when we read things in the media, like with the comment I just made there about that source of that last story coming from Sputnik, we always need to ask who benefits whenever we are reading a news item. There is a new report out that by Associated Press, so this is mainstream media reporting this, on the sugar industry's influence on what we think, we Americans think, is healthy. Back in the 1960s, the sugar industry was funding research that that questioned the role that sugar plays in heart disease while pointing the finger at fat. And so a whole generation of us grew up thinking that fat was bad and sugar was okay. This analysis, just published Monday this week, is based on documents released, correspondence between a trade group, a sugar trade group, and researchers at Harvard. So the sugar industry, sugar lobbyists, funding research at the university level, with the results saying, hey, look, drinking all these sugary drinks from Kool-Aid to cola, fine. Just lay off the fat. Well, the fact is your body needs fat. One of the things that Sharon and I are doing as we're losing weight, we're not necessarily avoiding fats. I mean, she begins every day with a big slice of homemade bread slathered with butter. Now, we buy it locally from a farmer here, but still, traditionally, we'd have been taught that butter is bad. You can't have butter. If you're trying to lose weight, having fat is bad because fat means fat. And that, no, your body converts carbohydrates into fat. So reducing sugar intake is a good thing. We've cut out sugary drinks. When I have iced tea, it's unsweetened tea. Most of the time, I just drink water. And anymore, I don't miss sodas. Diet sodas aren't any better because there's research that shows that the sweeteners used in sodas will actually trick your body into trying to hang on to the fat stores that it's got. So just get rid of the sodas. Get rid of the colas. Go to water. Drink water. If you're going to drink tea, drink unsweetened tea. You know, don't layer it up with sugar. The only sugar we really have during the course of a day is with the creamer that we put in the coffee. And if push came to shove, I could drink it black. But anyway, just a little reminder here that there are trade groups out there that are pushing not just the media, but also academic researchers, the guys in the white lab coats that we've been conditioned to trust because, you know, vaccines. They've been influenced by money encouraging the research things that benefit them. And again, this goes back 50 years. In 1964, the Sugar Association discussed a campaign to discuss negative attitudes towards sugar after studies began to come out linking sugar to heart disease. The following year, the group approved something called Project 226, which entailed paying Harvard researchers to document the links between fat and cholesterol and heart disease. And the researchers overstated the consistency of the literature on fat and cholesterol while downplaying studies on sugar. That research made its way to the press, and therefore, for 50 years, people like you and me grew up thinking that if you were prone to heart disease, you're okay with the sugar, but you just had to get rid of the fat. My dad had a heart attack at the age I am now. And so far, thankfully, I'm not showing any indications that I'm going the same route. But I started lowering my cholesterol a lot earlier in life than he did. But maybe I don't need to. Maybe the cholesterol is not the problem, is the point. You know, Dad lived until the age of 69, another 15 years after his heart attack. But he was on a low-fat diet ever after. You know, chicken was grilled, never fried. Fried foods right out. But he was still eating breads and starches and stuff. He did lose weight. He actually took good care of his health after that heart attack. But the response was to get rid of fat, when in fact the research may have been skewed because of money provided by the sugar trade industry. This I bring up just because it's kind of an ominous pairing of two companies that have dark reputations. That's Bayer and Monsanto. Bayer has made an offer, and Monsanto's shareholders have accepted it to purchase Monsanto. It's a $66 billion deal following months of negotiations. If it is approved by regulators in the U.S. and around the world, I imagine that the EU is going to have something to say about this as well. Bayer would basically absorb Monsanto, based in St. Louis, Missouri. Bayer, of course, a German company. I think the interest here is that Bayer, because of its interest in chemistry and Monsanto's interest in chemistry through the chemicals used in farming, agriculture, there may be some synchronicities there, is the thought between the boards of directors here. But we shall see it. What it does between Bayer and Monsanto is it certainly reduces the options that farmers have when it comes to choosing what to use when trying to, you know, grow their crops. This is kind of amusing in a dark sort of way. So forgive me if you find this offensive. I'm not intending it to be offensive, but this is one of those stories that global warming alarmists probably don't want you to hear. Or if they do mention this, it's probably something that would be spun differently than the way I'm going to present this. Scientists at an Arctic research lab on an island north of Russia called Troynoy Island have been, and according to the article, which was published today, September 14th, have been trapped inside their laboratory for 2 weeks because they've been besieged by polar bears. Polar bears are inside a weather station on this island since August 10th, but adult bears are circling the base. The researchers had a dog with them. The dog, sadly, made a meal for the bears. Team members have run out of flares. One of their dogs, they've got multiple dogs apparently, one of the dogs has been killed by a bear, according to the Russian news agency TASS. Russian authorities are sending out reinforcements, including dogs and new flares to scare the bears away, but the so the voyage to the island is likely to take another month. They can't fly to this island? But under Russian law, killing the polar bears is illegal, so the researchers have been relying on flares and rubber bullets, and obviously that has not done the trick. Clearly, the bears are healthy enough to keep up their vigil, waiting for the researchers to go stir crazy and wander outside. no doubt revenge for global warming. Bank of America has put out it signed on to a meme, and I first saw this years ago. I thought, well, this is nuts. This is the result of some person who's too intelligent with not enough time and too much time on their hands. And sadly, not an improper worldview. They don't have a biblical worldview. Bank of America says that there's about a 50% chance that we are living in the Matrix, that what we experience as real is actually a digital simulation. Of course, that's the plot of the Matrix films, that people are living in a computer simulation without realizing it. But the bank's wealth management company, which is Merrill Lynch, of course, you know, BOA absorbed Merrill Lynch in the wake of the 2008-2009 financial crisis. They put out a memo to investors outlining their Matrix theory, which is, again, 50-50 that we are living in a photorealistic 3D simulation. Frankly, I don't grasp the Venn diagram that shows the overlap between, you know, business investors and people who believe in a holographic universe, you know, that we're living in a digital simulation. Seems like it would be a pretty small overlap on that Venn diagram, but they've released a handy full color chart and everything showing investors why this is something that may be a part of our future reality. So again, 50% chance that we're living in a matrix and not really living in real life. But sadly, there are many people who are already buying into this reality. We talked about that this week with Dr. Michael Lake. Was a daily update just the other day on Skywatch TV. People who believe that we are not experiencing reality, or people who to make it a little more realistic, people who spend a lot of time online have been conditioned, I think, to believe that what they're doing online doesn't really count as right and wrong. In other words, you can have a virtual relationship with someone else through cyberspace, and it really doesn't count as adultery because it's not real, it's not physical. Well, yeah, sadly, as we get more technocentric, if that's even possible, generations coming up have never known life without a mobile device. But as we become even more technocentric, that's going to become an important factor in determining morality of the future. As Opal Singleton, the director of our CEO of MillionKids.org, pointed out when she addresses classes of high school students about games like Grand Theft Auto, where in one level you have to have sex with a prostitute in the game. And, you know, again, it's a 3D first person game. And then in order to, and you have to pay money. And then in order to get the money back, and you have to pay real money to do it, by the way, to get the money back, you have to kill the prostitute. And when she asked the class that she was addressing how many students thought it was wrong, it was like 4 out of 120. Because it's not real. It's virtual. It doesn't really count. And so if we're living in the Matrix, then everything that we do is unreal and doesn't really count. I think there's some really, really serious implications, moral implications, when we start going down that road. And it is the reason I bring this article up about Bank of America and Merrill Lynch. It's gaining traction among the mainstream. We are no longer, people who are talking about it like us are no longer sounding quite as crazy as we did a couple of years ago. Coming up on A View from the Bunker this weekend, a woman who was a guest on PID Radio 10 years ago, and when we kind of lost track of her, she essentially went on the run, feared for her safety. We spoke by Skype a couple of weeks ago when she was in Uruguay. She now lives in Mexico full time. She writes for New Eastern Outlook and has been talking for a long time about why the elites want us dead. She no longer sounds as crazy as she did 10 years ago. That will be the interview posted on Sunday, September 18th. Next Wednesday, two more interviews from the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. Jeff Kinley, Pastor Jeff Kinley, and Joseph Farah, the publisher of WND, WorldNet Daily, WND.com. And then September 25th, an interview I hope you find as fascinating as I do. A gentleman named Richard Burke writes under the pen name R.E.J. Burke. He's written a series of novels that he calls Raising Up Pharaoh. It is set in the world of about 4000 BC, the pre-literate culture of the Middle East, the Ubaid culture, they call it. We're talking the area around southeast Iraq, western Iran, the very early, proto-dynastic rule in Egypt. Fascinating period of history because it wasn't that long after the fall. He's done a lot of research, and as I was researching my presentations for the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference and then the subsequent presentations I've given at Morningside Church on the literal reality of the supernatural war and how it's recorded in the Bible and how history informs what the Bible tells us about God versus the gods. So Richard Burke, author of the Raising Up Pharaoh series, we'll talk about the ancient world and the Bible. That interview, God willing, posted September 25th at vftb.net and my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. By the way, the website, vftb.net, has not been updated in about a week and a half. We've been struggling a bit with the transfer of our websites from our old hosting company to the new hosting company. We've got gilberthouse.org, which is the Gilbert House Fellowship website, transferred over. My website is still in process. Don't have all the images over there yet. VFTB, I hope I can get mostly transferred today and then point the name servers over. But the reasons for the slow updates on the website, vftb.net, because try not to make things more difficult for the guys at the new hosting company to get the files transferred over. Unfortunately, the guys at the old hosting company aren't giving us any help whatsoever. I guess they figure they're losing our business anyway, so why bother? Thank you very much, Bluehost. If you'd given us some service before, we'd still be with you. But hopefully, within another week or two, we will have all of this resolved and things will be back to being up to date. Nothing irritates me more than a website that actually puts dates on a calendar and stuff and then never actually updates that calendar. Well, I'm guilty of that now, but it's because we're in the process of trying to get things transferred over. The Gilbert House Fellowship, we missed this past week because GilbertHouse.org was offline, but it is back, and the website is back, so the Bible study will be back this Sunday, 1 hour each on the Old Testament and the New Testament as we go through the Bible chronological order. You'll find that posted midday Sunday at GilbertHouse.org. That's GilbertHouse.org. On Monday, another episode of my novel, The God Conspiracy, first published about 10 years ago, now available as a free audiobook. New episodes released every Monday at thegodconspiracy.tk, thegodconspiracy.tk, or subscribe at youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Skywatch TV, our third week with Jonathan Kahn. Next week, we're still in the middle of the second interview of the three. This week, it is fascinating stuff, and the new book, The Book of Mysteries, available at skywatchtv.com, along with, as is typical for Tom Horn, lots and lots of other stuff. You'll find all of that posted at skywatchtv.com. We appreciate you taking the time to give us a review and a rating at iTunes or at Stitcher or wherever you hear a view from the bunker. We appreciate your likes on Facebook as well, and that's where we discuss the issues that we raise on the program here. You'll find us at facebook.com/viewfromthebunker. View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. His website is incompetech.com. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.